Welcome to All Being Well, the podcast for not-profit, charity and social enterprise professionals. My name is Claire Warner and I'm a wellbeing strategist and management coach who helps purpose-driven professionals and organisations to recognise and embrace the benefits of individual and workplace wellbeing. I've created this podcast to help you identify some of the causes of unwellbeing in your work and personal life, and to help and inspire you to put well-being at the centre of everything you do and to reap the benefits. We'll be talking about the different areas where using a well-being focus can have a positive impact and talking to people who've already done so they can share their stories with you. Think of this as your regular guide to well-being beyond the yoga and quinoa. Hello, today I would like to talk to you about self-awareness and the impact that our own self-awareness can have on both our well-being and our ability to manage relationships in the workplace, whether those relationships be specific line management relationships or whether they are just relationships with colleagues or people who are in other organisations that we regularly work with. Well, what is self-awareness? Self-awareness basically is just what you know about yourself. And self-awareness probably comes in many different shapes or forms. There's some things that we just become aware of ourselves about just because we spend enough time with ourselves to learn those things about ourselves. And some things are pointed out to us, and some things we learn over a period of time. Some things we go through exercises or through tests and surveys and things like that in order to help lead us towards self-awareness. Some people not only aren't self-aware, but also aren't aware that they're not self-aware. They're kind of just blissfully ignorant that such a thing might exist. Some people, like in anything in life, there are extreme scales. Some people are acutely self-aware and are permanently in a state of examining awareness, correcting, amplifying, making changes to the way that they behave or the way they make decisions or the way they operate. In general, there are two kinds of different types of self-awareness. There's internal self-awareness. So that is all about how well or how clearly we are able to understand ourselves, how clearly we see our own behaviours, how clearly we see our own personalities, our own characteristics, our traits, how clearly we are aware of our own values and how well we live them, how we know ourselves and those kind of subconscious behaviors or those subconscious traits we have that say, this is the stuff I do without thinking about it, this is the way that I behave without thinking about it, or this is the way I am and I understand that this is just me, and yes, sometimes I need to do something about it. Then there is external self-awareness, and this is, well, how well are we aware? How clearly do we understand? How clearly do we see how others see us? There's two types. Do you understand that? One is how clearly we see ourselves, and the other is how clearly others see us. And they're not always the same. And like I said, not everybody is aware of one or either of them, let alone both of them. Now, get to my age, ripe old age of 47. And a lot of those internal self-awareness characteristic trait things are things that, well, we've lived a fairly long time with them. And we either are really aware of them and just kind of get on with the fact that, well, yes, I know that's just the way I am. Or we learn to correct them. I don't necessarily make them right, that they're all bad, but sometimes we can make changes to, well, I know that this is my default position, and I don't want to do that, so I want to move to this. There are various different ways that we learn over life, and again, not necessarily consciously, that we're going to change the way that our internal traits are. I'm going to use myself as an example. not because I'm an awesome example, but because I have my own permission to use myself as an example. And so I don't have any GDPR infringement liabilities coming my way. I know that as a child, I was painfully, painfully shy. I know that I had a small group of really close friends rather than a large group of friends. I know that I did a lot of thinking. I know that I wasn't particularly loud. I know that over time, I learned that in order to get some of the things I wanted or to do some of the things I wanted to do, I needed to get over that, or at least not to get over it, but to be able to put up with it, to go and do the things I wanted to do. I know now, like I said, 47 years old, I am still highly introverted. People who know me, people who've worked with me, often find this hard to believe. I am highly introverted. I'm highly shy. I really don't find it comfortable walking into a room full of people I don't know. I have learned tools and techniques to not only allow me to do those, but also to allow me to allow others to think that I'm not finding that particularly uncomfortable. However, when I spot a fellow introvert, we can generally spot each other, not always, but sometimes spot each other and spot the same tools and the techniques and the tactics we've learned to get over that, not just being introverted in terms of how lots of peopling is something that reduces our energy rather than increases our energy, but also introvertedness linked with shyness or uncomfortableness, if that's even a word, with people we don't know. So I know that about myself. I know that I have learned a lot of corrected behavior around being able to walk into a room of people I don't know and strike up a conversation. I also know that I have friends and colleagues and new people that I absolutely love being with. I genuinely, it's not that I don't want to see anybody, but I know that peopling absolutely does drain my battery, not refill it. And so if I know I'm going to be doing a lot of peopling, I know I need to prepare for it, and I know I need some time to recover from it afterwards. That's not like recover as in I need a day in bed and I need medication. But if you use that analogy of, does it charge your battery or does it reduce your battery? Absolutely. Lots of socializing and lots of peopling reduces my battery. I have friends who lots of peopling and lots of socializing absolutely recharges their battery. It doesn't mean we enjoy it any less or any more than each other. It's just the impact it has on us. I also know about myself that I make almost every decision in my heart. Almost every decision. I know I am an open book. I know that you can usually tell exactly what I'm thinking from my face. Again, a behavior I've had to learn to try to correct, at times more successfully than others. But absolutely, I know that instinctively I make decisions from the heart, not from the head. But I also know that I've now learned that. So I will always, maybe not always, regularly apply a filter that says, I know that that gut decision was a heart decision. What might that look like if I was to put it through a filter of making decisions with my head? Head doesn't usually win, but sometimes it allows me to change the way I might approach something. Sometimes it's just good to know that I have at least considered what a head decision might look like and have reverted back to heart decision. What else do I know about myself? I know that I'm an all or nothing kind of person. If you're going to get something, you either get it all or nothing. I don't do half measures. I'm either interested in it or I'm not interested in it. If I'm interested in it, I can get highly interested in it. Again, I've had to learn to temper this. It would have been impossible to go through 47 years of life by going, I'm sorry, but I'm only doing the things I'm interested in and I'm not doing any of the others. I have learned ways of how do I get around that? How do I do the stuff I'm not particularly interested in and then reward myself with the things that I love, the things that I'm getting? It's been very interesting now working for myself in making decisions about what kinds of work do I want to do? What kinds of people do I want to work with? And now I'm in a really fortunate position. The age has also helped where I know who I want to work with and who I don't. There are projects I'm just not interested in working on. there are projects I would absolutely love to work on. There's not much grey area in the middle. I am very all or nothing. I know that about myself. I also know, and this is something that plays out a lot at home, I'm married to Mr. W. I have been for 14 years. We love each other. We like each other. We're married. We've got two children. We still speak to each other. We have totally different approaches to lots of things. If there is a job in the house that needs doing, say we take a week off work to do, I don't know, a big DIY job or something. If you could replicate the exact same situation and set us both to work on the same thing, I know for a fact that at 9:15 on Monday morning, when I've finished my coffee, I will start the job. I will find the first few things I need to start doing the thing, start it, then go get the next bit, then do a bit more, then go get the next bit, then do a bit more. I need to see results when I'm left just to my own devices. I need to see results from the start. Mr. W, totally the opposite. If we've got a week off work to achieve a job, he will spend 4 days thinking about it, planning it, preparing for it, getting all the things sorted. And on the fifth day, he'll then set to work and do it. I know for a fact that he finds my way really frustrating because no, on Monday morning when I start out cutting holes in walls and all sorts, I have no idea how I'm going to finish the job. But I know that at that point in time, cutting a hole in a wall looks like a really good idea. Likewise, his way totally frustrates me, totally, because I can't see anything. Well, I can see him standing there with his hand on his hip and his chin in his other hand, thinking and maybe writing the odd thing down. And not only do I not see anything on Monday, but I also don't see anything on Tuesday. And I don't see anything on... Whereas by Wednesday, you will see something of what I've done. Yeah, I might have had to have undo some things because I've thought of a better way or I hadn't thought it through properly or whatever. Now, when we get to Friday, we generally will end up with the same end result. I will have gone a circuitous route, but will have done stuff and learned stuff along the way. And Mr. W will have thought all the stuff through till Thursday evening. He might have gone and done the shopping Thursday evening. And on Friday morning, he starts and he does the job. Roughly the same result, two very, very different routes to get there. Now, if you take that just one example and apply it to how Mr. W and I might work together, which is never going to happen, let me just add, or how somebody like me might work with somebody like him and vice versa, we both want to get the job done. We're both going to end up with a result that's really good. We both have two totally different ways of getting there, and we both find each other's way really frustrating. How often can you relate that to things that happen in the workplace? Same result, same passion, same drive, same desire to get the thing done. You're both going to go two totally different ways to get there. Have a think about that. So I know that, again, I'm using me as an example, not because I'm a good example, but just because I have my permission to do it. I am introverted and being with lots of people lots of the time actually saps my energy, not builds my energy. Therefore, I actually found lockdown easier than some people who really struggled by not gaining that energy building factor by spending time with others. So I know that about myself. I know I make decisions with my heart. I know that you get all or nothing. I also know I make decisions fairly quickly and then have to go back and think about, have I considered everything? But I'll make decisions quickly. I'll act quickly. And I know that, like I said on that example with Mr. W, that my route to doing things generally is let's get started and see where we go rather than let's have the whole thing planned out and then get there. When I very first started learning about some of the kind of concepts or methods or thinking behind, well, what might self-awareness look like, I was on a management training program that I was sent on when I worked at the Imperial War Museums. All of us, anybody at the Imperial War Museums at that time, it was around 20 years ago, anyone who line managed anybody else, we were all sent on this awesome training with Roffey Park Institute. And as part of that training, we did the Myers-Briggs characteristic, Myers-Briggs test, I think it's called. There are very many different types of this kind of test. They're called personality tests or characteristic tests or self-awareness tests. They're kind of, they tell us about some of the intrinsic, ingrained, subconscious or things that we do that we're not aware that we do just because they're a habit that we've always done them. There are lots of them. Like I said, there's Myers-Briggs, which gives you four letters at the end of the thing. There is a colours test. There's one that's called Enneagram types. There are very, very many different types of these tests. Enneagram I have used in the past, and I have found them to be okay, but they're a bit, I use the word spiritual, that's not what I mean, but they're a bit more woo than I like to be. Again, personality type, I don't, that's not something, that whole spiritually type thing isn't for me. I know it's for others, it's not for me. The colours one, what I have found when we use this in the workplace is that, yes, they're very, they're just as useful because there are fewer colours. There does tend to be, or in some of the organisations I've seen, there can tend to be a hierarchy that comes out that says, well, this colour is the best. And I don't like that. None of this is the best. Actually, what we learn is none of them are the best. Just knowing, just having that little bit more insight around who you are and how you characteristically operate, A, helps you say, what does the rest of my team look like? Are we all the same? Well, are we all the same colour? Are we all the same Enneagram type? Are we all the same set of Myers-Briggs letters? And if we are, wow, what are we missing? What might the world look like? Or how might our decision-making be done? Or how might we approach things? Or how might we work together if there were different kinds of diversities of thought, of characteristic, of way of doing things in there? So like I said, Myers-Briggs was the first test that I did 20 years ago. So I was 26, 27-ish. And I remember at the time, I still have the folder, that I came out with the four letters, I for Igloo, N for November, F for Freddy, and J for Jigsaw. Not the phonetic alphabet, I'm well aware. And I stayed that for quite some time. And now when I do the test, I come out as I for Igloo, N for November, F for Freddy, P for Peter. I have stayed fairly the same. Every time I answer the questions, I think I've answered them differently. And every time I come out as the same four letters. And the way that this Myers-Briggs character test characterization survey works is that it uses a set of questions, as you might imagine, that your answers to which help them in their little magic way come out with four letters. So you are given a position on a scale in four different areas. So the first area on the scale on this Myers-Briggs test is introvert or extrovert. So you come out with a letter that's either an I or an E. So according to their description, it says that this aspect shows how we interact with our surroundings. And it says that introverted people prefer solitary activities. We get exhausted by social interaction and they can be quite sensitive to external stimulation like sound, sight, smell, touch, taste, those kinds of things. Extroverted individuals prefer group activities and they get energized by social interaction and they tend to be more enthusiastic and more easily excited than introverts. Now, what that's not saying is that everybody is either 100% I or 100% E. It's also not saying that there can't be elements of you that are both. So I know that I can be highly enthusiastic and I can be highly excited, but only by certain things. I know that I don't sit totally all the way over to the, let's say, eyes on the left and knees on the right. I know I don't sit all the way over to the left, but I reckon I sit maybe 70%. 70% I, 30% E, if you see what I mean. The next set of letters that Myers-Briggs looks at is sensing or intuition. And so out of this, you get the letter S for sugar or N for November. And it says that this aspect determines how we see the world and how we process information. So people who get the letter S are observant people. They're highly pragmatic. They're practical. They're down to earth. And they tend to have strong habits. And they focus on what has happened what is happening and what has already happened. Intuitive individuals, so the under end of the scale, that's the people who get the letter N, are imaginative, they're open-minded, and they're curious. They prefer new, they prefer novel, they prefer the possible rather than stability or the same. Again, I know that I always come out an N. I'm not 100% N, I might be 60% N. There are some things I will use what has happened in the past, but I won't let that dictate my future. It's just interesting to me while I wander off and go and look at the future that is possible, the art of the possible. The next area that the Myers-Briggs looks at is how we make decisions and how we cope with emotions. So here you would get either a T for thinking or an F for feeling. Now, if you get a T, if you are on the thinking end of the scale, people who are on that end of the scale focus on objectivity and rationality. They prioritize logic over emotions. Sometimes people who are at the extreme T end of the scale can hide their feelings, can hide their emotions, can be less open book as those people who are the feelers, if you will. Feeling people, I think this is probably the part of the scale that I score highest on. Feeling individuals are sensitive, as in things affect them really easily. They're highly emotionally expressive. They're very, very empathetic. And they're don't prioritize logic in any way, shape or form. And they certainly don't hide their feelings. I know that, giving you an example today, I'm an oversharer. I will generally overshare, not just because it's a habit, but because it's my way of being able to give an example. But I also, like I said earlier, my face is an open book. I'd rather. There are certain meetings that I remember in my in-house working days. There are certainly board meetings that I think I would rather have attended by the telephone rather than in person, so that people couldn't see the look on my face while I was attending them. I find it very, very hard to not just show, but express and behave what I'm feeling. It's not that I think you have to know because my opinion's really important. It's just that I'm so emotionally engaged in something, I can't help but share my opinion. The next set of letters, the last two sets of letters, is either a J or a P. This is the area that I mentioned to you. In over 20 years, I have slid from tipping one way to the other. Now, I suspect I wasn't an extreme J previously, but now I regularly come out as a P. This aspect reflects our approach to work, to planning, and to decision making. So, again, this is where Mr. W and I suspect, sit at fairly different parts of the scale. So people who come out with a J, who are at the judging end of the scale, are decisive, they're thorough, and they're highly organized. They value clarity, they value predictability, closure, and they prefer structure and planning to spontaneity. Now, I'll be honest, as I read that out, I like the sound of that, but I like the sound of somebody else doing it. I don't like the sound of me doing it. Prospecting people, the people who come out with a P at the other end, they're really good at improvising. They're really good at spotting opportunities. They're really good at taking advantage of spur of the moment things that, well, what if? They tend to be really flexible. They tend to be non-conformists. They don't do something just because that's the way it's been done. They prefer to keeping their options open, their minds open, and jumping in there and starting, not necessarily with a fully formed plan in place. Now, this is just one of very, very, very many ways that we can increase our self-awareness. But I find that these four areas, if we look at them in the context of how we approach work and how others approach work, and how, well, not necessarily approach work, but how we behave in work, the person that turns up to work, the person that turns up in the workplace, if we're able to understand this about ourselves, that's really great, because it says, well, I understand some of this about me and lots of other things as well. And so I now also understand, why is it that after 3 days of an in-person conference, yes, I'm buzzing, but I'm also ready to not see anybody other than the dog. Why is it that then? I also know if I'm going to a conference for 3 days, the last thing I need to book in my diary for the day after is a full day of in-person training. Or if I do need to book in a full day of in-person training, that I have kind of moderated something that I've done on the last day of that 3-day conference, or that I have prepared myself to say, you're going to find this day quite challenging because you've already done 3 days of peopling. Or the more that I'm able to be self-aware of the way I operate, the way I am, the way that other things impact me, the better I'm able to prepare myself for them. Also, the more that I'm able to be aware of the fact that there are these other ends of the scale, there are other ways that other people operate, and knowing about them and knowing about how those then impact others, then also tell me why, for example, there's one set of people who absolutely want to get everybody back in the office tomorrow and everybody in the office tomorrow forever, because they really need that interaction and those other people to help recharge their batteries. It's not just about what are those tasks within the workplace that are done best together rather than independently on a Zoom screen, but actually, subconsciously, we're not aware of it, or we certainly aren't making a deliberate choice over it. But actually, I get energized and I get my batteries recharged while I am with people. It's not saying that I like that one set of people likes peopling and the other doesn't. Everybody loves to be with the people they love to be with. It's just that while you're doing that, at the end of that peopling, what has happened to your energy levels? Have they gone sky high through the roof and you're ready to go and do anything else? Or have they taken down your battery and you need to go away and spend some time in a bit more solitude to recharge those batteries? Imagine if you could then understand that about the people you work with, about your own boss, about people who sit within your workflow, who you might rely on for work the bit before yours in the workflow, or people who need the bit that you do then to do their bit. Go for judging and prospecting. Imagine if that then helped you better understand, actually, yeah, I might be a Mr. W. I really struggle with things where I can't see how we're going to get to the end. Or if you have to work with a me that says, ah, let's just give it a whirl, see where we get, see how we get there. We'll make the route up along the way. There's one thing about starting the work. There's another about how then does that impact when two of us need to work together and one of us wants a plan and one of us wants a What about if we look at those other sets of letters around the thinking and the feeling? There are organisations I've worked with where I've been working with individuals and they said, I've just found this person really hard. They don't share anything. I don't really know anything about them. They're probably an extreme or a fairly high scaling T. They're a thinker. They like logic. They like objectivity. They like rationality. That's not saying that feeling people don't, but depending where you are on the scale and how that plays out in your own personality, it might mean that the last thing you would ever have done on earth is record this, let alone share it with a whole load of people. I don't need to. And it's not that you don't want to. It's around comfort zones and everything. What's within your comfort zone? Where do you need? We all know we need to step outside of our comfort zone once in a while, but the more we're aware that in doing this task, I or another person is stepping outside of their comfort zone, we're not going to change it, but it helps us understand why that somebody might be cautious about a thing that we find so totally natural, we just don't even think about doing it. Sensing our intuition. People who have habits, who are focused on using data and past historical data, behavior, things to in order to inform what we're going to do. And people who go, not going to look at the past, I'm going to look at the art of the possible. What might we be able to do in the future? What's novel? What's never been done before? What is the future possibility? Again, in organizations, we need both of these. We need people who go, this is what history tells us. This is what the aggregate and the average of what we've done in the past might suggest we could do in the future. And we also need people who go, not bothered about the past because I have no intention of repeating that. What I want to do is go and see what is the future possibility. Now, learning about some of these things helps us do lots of things. It helps us understand ourselves. It helps us understand how others might see us. It helps us understand a little bit more about others within our teams, within our workspaces, within our organizations, and how they operate. And maybe then how we learn to operate between each other, where we're similar and where we operate very differently. What it also helps us see is, well, if my whole team are all INFPs, what are we missing out on? What would my team look like if I had a ETJ? ESTJ in it. What would that look like if, what might the behaviors or the actions or the sequence of events or the approach or just what might the decision I've made or the approach I'm going to take or the way I'm going to do it look like if I just applied a different filter to it? Sometimes our teams are so small, we can't have all those letters in it. Sometimes the teams are just the teams and we just happen to be three people who are very similar. Doesn't matter, as long as we're aware of, well, if we three are very similar, we're only looking at a quarter of the world because we're only looking at it from the perspective that we three have within our nature to look at things. So we need to be aware of, well, what's happening in the other three quarters? What are we not currently, what filter are we not putting on it? What possibility or what lens or what approach? Or what value are we not currently, don't we just currently have in our field of vision? I'm not saying it's necessarily going to change anything, it might do, but we at least need to be aware of what we're not looking at as well as what we are looking at. If you're interested in any of this, in learning more about self-awareness, about how this might impact you, your team, your organization, go online. You can find lots of these versions of different things. Like I said, there's one that's around colors. There's one that's around Enneagrams. And then there's Myers-Briggs. Now, there is a free version, official free version of the Myers-Briggs. It's called 16 Personalities. If you go on there, you get asked some questions. The secret about answering those questions is to not think about it or to not go, that depends on whether it's this day or that day or where I've been or what I've done. Go with your uncorrected gut behavior feeling. What might that be? See what you come out with. Now, like I say, there are parts of different descriptions that I absolutely can see myself in that aren't necessarily in the letter that I have come out at, but generally that will be because I've come out at 65%, and so there's 35% of me that still has traits of the other area. If you're interested, go online, have a look, see what it comes out at. See what your colleagues come out as, see what your friends come out as, see what your other half comes out as. This is not pigeonholing. This is not about anyone being better than any of the other. But I know the first time I read it, there were just a few penny dropping moments where I went, oh, that would explain that, or that would explain that. It's not necessarily even about correcting anything. It's just about being more aware of, what do I do? What's the stuff that I do that is so habitual and so ingrained that I'm not even aware that I'm doing it a particular way? It's just the way I do it, or it's the way that I think it. It's about the way I feel. It's about the way I sense things. And what might that tell me about, A, how I behave, and B, how others see me? If you do it, and if you do take part and you do get your letters, I'd really love to hear what you thought about the description you came out with. I come out with something that's called a mediator. I saw the title, I went, no, that's not me. And then I read the description, I went, ah, yeah, that is me. I'd love to hear about how you found it, what you thought about it. Drop me a line and let me know. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
To find out more, to join my mailing list, and to be notified of when new blog and podcast episodes are launched, head to claire-warner.com. That's Claire, C-L-A-I-R-E. Choose subscribe and sign up. While you're there, take a look in the freebies section. There are some downloads in there around workplace and individual well-being that you might find useful.